Welcome to the Shift Happens podcast, where we explore the latest trends and insights in the digital workplace. From the role of AI in the workplace to the future of remote work, we cover it all. Tune in as we chat with industry leaders and experts. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started in the digital landscape, we've got you covered. Subscribe to Shift Happens wherever you listen to podcasts and stay ahead of the curve.
Shift Happens podcast.
Welcome to the Shift Happens podcast, where we explore the latest trends and technologies transforming the future of work. In this episode, we sit down with Donna Sarkar, who is currently building an AI extensibility program at Microsoft. We'll discuss the role of AI and its extensibility in software development, the challenges and opportunities in the field today, and how Donna's experiences have prepared her for her current work. Let's dive in. Donna, thank you. I can't believe Shift Happens podcast has been around for 83, 84 episodes, and we haven't interviewed you. So now is the time.
That's weird. But you know what? It's meant to be this one, though, because you could have interviewed me about 10 topics, but this one feels extremely relevant for what you all are doing and for what I'm doing.
That's right. And as the name implies, Shift Happens, we talk about a lot of the shifts, not only in technology, in life, in business. And we always start off with a song, right? Because we know that music helps elevate and helps us relate to not only the feelings, but what's transpiring in that certain point in our life. So what song resonates with you as you think about disruption, change, and transformation? And why did you pick that song?
This was a hard question because I don't think in music. I know you think in music and you've made me do these like ridiculously amazing dance move stocks. But this time I thought of a song, which is the 8 Mile song, Lose Yourself. And the reason is, and it is such a, I think, this generation's Rocky anthem, because it is about, you know, seizing opportunities, you know, one shot, one opportunity. And that's kind of where we're at, right? It's like the people who lead right now are going to be leading. And the people who get a head start and grab that opportunity and go with it, whether they're ready or not, are the ones who are going to lead. And then the second part is just going through internal and external challenges. And that is so normal for technology and so, as a whole. But now we're having to overcome challenges that we may have pushed off for a long time. And I'm looking at due date equality, right? To be able to go embrace like this transformation period we're in. And the third one is all about just the intensity and the pressure that people are under. You know, we're in a strange economic climate and a strange just like global climate. There's a lot of pressure on companies and people to go and perform because they want to be successful in this period. And it's a matter of having to do it fast, having to do it now, having to do it securely, while there's all this external pressure from the world, you know, pulling us in all these different directions. So that was the reason I chose Lose Yourself. And I thought it was very, very fitting for that question.
You know, Donna, when you said Lose Yourself, suddenly all the Eminem remix started playing in my head. You know, it brought me back to like high school. Your point around challenges and embracing the unknown, right? Reminds me of the opening line. It says, look, if you had one shot or one opportunity, because it acknowledges the inherent fear and uncertainty. And we're in this uncertain time right now while everybody's hot and heavy on, oh, AI is cool, but we really don't know what's in the horizon. We keep building and building and hoping that it would bode well, but will it really? But then we don't know, right? But we take what's best in us and maximize it and take that shot. And in the end, as you look at history and humanity, we always triumph in the end. So Lose Yourself.
Yeah. Also, I'm an Emperor of Detroit, and so am I. So obviously, present. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. All right. So for folks that don't know you, we have a lot of listeners around the world, but I'm sure everybody knows Donna. Just in case you don't, you've held tons of roles at Microsoft, from your claim to fame in Windows Explorer, building a feature there, to leading the Windows Insider program, HoloLens, sending HoloLens to space, doing accessibility and now focus on AI. How have all these experiences prepared you to what you're doing
today? That is such a great question. I actually thought about this recently, and I realized my theme has always been about tech democratization. Very hard word to say, but how to make tech more equitable for people all around the world, right? And part of it is things like, how can we make building things easier for specific sectors, right? Like hardcore manufacturing, so cars and rockets and all of this stuff. I know 3D visualization would probably help them more than flat screen visualization. So there's the tech democratization angle. Accessibility is all about how do you create tech for people with all skills and abilities. And, you know, I talk about being dyslexic all the time and how tech is my superpower in dealing with dyslexia in the workplace. And I also worked on Windows, of course, which is used by 1.3 billion people. I did all that work in Nigeria and Kenya on how we can make Windows more equitable and usable, like working on how these things work offline better and how do things work with lower bandwidth and how can we shrink the size of Windows at the time from 4 gigs to 3 gigs so the download would take less time. So those are some of the things that I was really proud of. But I felt the tech democratization thing really kicked in when I started working on the Power Platform, the low-code space, because I'm a high-code dev. You and I are both engineers by trade. And then we look around the world and say, there's 500 million apps that need to be written that are not going to be written by devs because we just don't have time. So Power Platform was so interesting for me because you're literally creating the next generation of software makers, and AI is a continuation for me of that, very much, right? Right now, you see GitHub Copilot has expanded to be GitHub Workspace, which is the software engineering tool for the future, right? So it allows anybody to learn to write code or write code easier and better in a very democratic sort of way. So for me, it's such a continuation of this theme that I've always been on. And for me, it was very fun to look back and say, oh, there's actually a red thread throughout this whole thing.
And that leads to the ethos at Microsoft, right, is empowerment. Every person, regardless of your race, your background, your organization, to be able to do more with tech, which is really cool.
Yep. But I think just focusing on the global planet is really important, because when we think like everyone and every organization, we tend to think of the ones we know. But then there's a lot we don't know. And the only way to get to know them is to do what I'm doing right now, which is get on planes and go meet them where they are. And, you know, Dux, you and I are big fans of getting on planes and meeting people where they are, because you fundamentally do not know how business works in the Philippines, where you are a general manager, or in Lagos, Nigeria, or in Uruguay, where I was 2 weeks ago, unless you're there. Like, you can have people visit you and talk to you and have endless arguments on Twitter, but unless you go and see, oh, this is what your connectivity looks like, this is the kind of machines you're able to buy here, these AI features do not work in the data center here. Until you are there, you actually have absolutely no idea what tech looks like in another country. That's what I think.
Exactly. I mean, I remember when the three of us was in Lisbon in January, who would have thought that green wine existed, right? But it's a thing. It's a thing in Portugal. So you gotta meet people in their onlyness. You gotta be...
Do you remember Lisbon? Yeah. I was afraid to do my demo because I didn't know if we were going to get results quickly. I'm like, is Copilot going to give me results in Lisbon? Let's test. And it turns out, yes, it did. But I didn't know that until we got there and had to test in real time.
A couple of questions on maybe unpacking some of what you said. Let's kind of stick to these, this idea of making it accessible and extensible. We know that you have recently taken on a new role, Microsoft. Awesome. You saw your open letter on your website. But I'm super interested in really learning more about how you think about the AI extensibility opportunity. It'd be great if you could maybe talk to us a little bit about that. And also, what does the dev program really entail?
We are doing a lot of work around Copilot extensibility for both Microsoft 365 Copilot and Microsoft Copilot. And you're going to hear about these options, right? Because you know about some of the existing ways. There are graph connectors, there's message extensions, there's Copilot Studio. There are ways to do it. But people are often confused. They're like, which of these is a push, which is a pull? Which of these is a real-time update versus having to be a push or a pull? Which of these is a one-way versus a two-way? Which of these are good for structured data versus unstructured data? These are amazing questions. And we've created, actually, a guide for Copilot extensibility. It's called the Copilot Learning Hub. It actually covers lots of topics, not just Copilot extensibility. I'm giving like my entire build spiel away right now, just so you know. So my team and I have been working on this thing. We call it like a college for Copilot. Okay. So rolling out Copilot Learning Hub, we're going to share how people can adopt Copilot. You know, all the things, the security and all that, but also how you use it. What are specific prompts that you type in the box, in what order to get results? But second, how do you extend Copilot through all these various ways? Like full on, this is for this, this is for that, this is for this, this is for that. Here's what you do first. Here's what you try saying. And then the third one that everyone asks is, when do you build your own compared to extending one? So we're going to cover all of these topics. And again, this is round one of rolling this out. We're going to get a lot of feedback from community where there is gaps, because I truly believe rolling out skilling content is how we're going to find product gaps. And we're going to say, the fact that we're having to over-function on the skilling content means the product does have a seam, that here's a very good opportunity for us as product makers to do a better job.
From our point of view, as you probably are aware, Donna, we are super excited about the work you're all doing. I think extensibility to Copilot is definitely an incredible bridge for organizations to really realize that, you know, AI is really a tangible thing. What is that core use case that can come to life with these capabilities? It starts with thinking about the extensibility of Copilot. We are also participating in the ISV Azure OpenAI and Fabric partner program. So we're already doing some work, and we highly encourage our listeners to definitely stay tuned to build. And, you know, as we started the conversation, take that shot to actually start building the extensibility components. I do have another follow-up question. Do you feel that the extensibility also can translate to other providers? We hear, obviously, organizations. Just this past week, I went to visit a customer that was at the Salesforce World Tour in New York City. And of course, they're talking about Einstein One platform. And I'm just curious if you see a world or if there's a view where there is this extensibility where you can have these Copilot-like capabilities that are cross-platform, and how that could be really beneficial to the customers.
One of the Dynamics Copilots, I actually am shooting an episode for Build about how it can connect to Salesforce databases, because we know people's data are where it's at, right? Their data is where it's going to be. They're not going to move their data. That doesn't make any sense. So there are ways to do it. And I think people don't understand the power of, you know, on the Power Platform, there's 1,300 connectors to all of these different places. And the Copilots can use some of them in different ways to solve some of this problem, specifically through some of the Dynamics ways, some Copilot Studio, et cetera. So a lot more on that. The other thing, though, I want to point out is we want Azure to be the center of the universe for AI models. It doesn't matter who make the model. So, for example, you've been seeing a lot of news about, yes, OpenAI models are in Azure, but so are Mistral, but so are Llama 3 that just came out. And there's these small language models like Phi-3, the small language model that can now run like on your phone or locally on a device. And those open up very good use cases because, you know this, half your companies who are maybe government or education or, you know, any of this public sector, they're like, no, we need offline capability for security purposes that run locally on your own machine. That's it. That's a humongous use case. And Azure AI actually give you that ability to go build an AI product using an offline model and be able to solve your own problem rather than, you know, taking a bet on some ginormous frontier model that does need to be online. So I want people to keep in mind, we're going to have a lot of options. With a lot of options comes a lot of questions, right? So what I see as my team's job is to clear up that confusion, is to say, what are our recommendations for what you're trying to do? Like, you know, you are a federal government trying to do blah. We recommend you take this path. You are a small business trying to do this thing. We recommend you pick up this Copilot, do this extension. So we're going to create a lot more like case study type things like this. because we do realize people are looking for guidance. They're like, yeah, we can run 100 experiments, but we're not you, Microsoft. We don't have time for this. Tell us what the recommended path is for a business like ours.
Hello, Shift Happens podcast listeners. I have an exciting offer for you. Join us for our in-person Shift Happens conference, October 10 to 11 in Washington, D.C. Registration is free. That's right, it's free. And you walk away with actionable strategies from industry leaders and peers to make Shift happen in your digital workplace. Visit shifthappens.to to register today. We'll see you there.
Yeah. Are you seeing any major hurdles, though, in the adoption side? I know we saw a lot of reports, and even we did our own study on just in general information management, and we started sort of polling organizations around their interest in really investing more in AI capabilities. So I'm just curious, as you're out there in the field, anything that's really critical now in terms of what people are getting stuck on? Is it adoption? Is it just change management within the organization? Is it a mindset shift that needs to occur?
I think it's three things, and they show up over and over in every country I've been to, and they show up for most of the Copilot experiences as well. One is, of course, the data security, right? Which data are we copiloting on right now? So that itself, people are unclear on. And that is one of the things we have to be really clear about. Be like, it's copiloting on your graph. What is the graph? Suddenly we're throwing around the word graph, acting like everyone knows. Then I get clear. I'm like, SharePoint sites you have access to in your tenant here, your OneDrive here, and then your Exchange. And, all of this email and stuff and Word documents that are in your graph. We're like, oh, that's what the graph means. Because we've said like graph, this and that, but it didn't affect people's day-to-day business until now. Now they're very curious about where this is coming from, or that's coming from. But, because of that adoption challenge, we've put in things like the SharePoint security, right? Saying like, okay, we only copilot over these SharePoints. We do not copilot over those SharePoints. Because people are like, I don't think we're ready to copilot our entire estate. You're like, cool. But we're ready to copilot over, I don't know, the finance teams, things. And we did that at Microsoft, right? We rolled out copilot team by team. Depends on who was most ready from a data point of view. So that was first issue. Second issue is people do not fundamentally understand large language models and generative AI. And I tell people, AI has been around a long time. We called it predictive AI. Now we're calling it predictive AI because we just called it AI for a long time. Dog cat, blueberry muffin or chihuahua. Like, we've done this for a long time. Generative AI is different because it generates new things. And when you're asking something to generate new things, it's going to be different every time. And that causes people a lot of anxiety. They were like, if I can't reproduce this, how do I explain that to my team, my customers, et cetera? And I say, I think we have to get more specific about the use cases because people are using generative AI like it's predictive AI, and they're not getting predictive results. They're getting generated results. So I think we as leaders in this space have to get very specific on use it for these test cases. Don't use it for these. Use something else for these. What is that something else? This other thing. So we have to give people a really very specific workflow, right? For these cases, do this. For those cases, do that. Third one, full on just change management, adoption, teaching, etc. People don't know which prompts to use. They don't know what prompts to use for their job. They don't know which prompts result in the best output versus an okay output. They don't know how to save them. They don't know how to share them. That is just basic change management. But because this is a very strange input mechanism, right? It's not like, oh, learn to click these buttons on the tool and they're going to be the same every time. Prompting for each thing is slightly different. Prompting for lawyers, different prompting for finance analysts. So the whole like lunch and learn, get skilled up thing is causing people a lot of angst. They were like, I can't believe I have to learn this brand new thing that's new to everybody. It's not like just new to my org. Nobody in the world has figured it out. Nobody. And on top of it, models are constantly changing, right? So we're always having to learn new things. So I've never seen the global tech industry so hungry to learn, but also terrified because you're not done learning kind of ever in this AI-verse right now.
And then the other part is it breaks the mold of how we think about software, right? Because traditional software, you know, input output, it's always the same, 1 + 1 = 2. But with this, especially Gen AI, it can be different every time. It learns, it evolves, and we don't quite know how to handle that just yet, right?
The non-deterministic nature of this is stressful to us. Statisticians are used to it because they're used to accuracy, right? They're saying this response is 86% accurate. And I'm like, what is that? That seems bad. It's like a B. They're like, no, that's good. That's good. 86 is really good. Like for medical field, you want 90, but for this, you're 80. I'm like, how do you decide that? How do you choose? Because for devs, it's like it ran or it didn't, right? It's kind of a binary question. So we are moving from binary to non-deterministic. We don't like that. But we're trying to use AI in binary products. That's why we're getting nervous. We're like, so write a new thing in Word about this. Not binary. Makes sense. Give me the exact value of adding all these up in Excel. That's a binary question. Do they add up to this number? Yes or no? And when you don't get the right answer, you're like, that's the wrong use case, right? So I think we have to get more specific about the use cases, but we have to first, as leaders, really do all of the experiments to figure out at this moment in time, 2024, what are the good use cases? This could change in the future, but right now, this is the information we have. So people have a good experience. So then when as AI improves, they're not like, I quit because I had a bad experience in 2023.
It's also, you know, what's interesting too is the user experience is changing and the way we engage with software. And so that in itself is introducing a new approach to problem solving for your typical information worker. And so prompt templates, right, could be really good in kind of getting people just comfortable with this shift into a new interface, a new experience. We all got used to right-click, drag, drop, right, look for something, and engage with the software that way. This is a very different engagement that we're having. And at the same time, it's exactly what you're saying. Now what's coming back, what's being generated, is it useful? Can I trust it? And there goes the other element of it, which is the security and the trust of data.
And one of the things is typing stuff into a box with no guide is not a natural input at all. And everyone's like, oh, so you can talk to the box. I'm like, that's not better. I'm not going to be like, if Monday type, you know, generate document status update for blah. I'm like, that is coding. That is called coding. And we're trying to say your lawyer's going to do that. No, it's not, right? No. So the analogies do not work. The input method of a blank box and type words in it and get results is strange. It is a strange input. And that's why everyone's freaking out. That's why we need prompt libraries, prompt templates, auto finishing prompt things. We need a lot more work on the UX that I think each company, such as yourselves, this is where Microsoft partners kill it because you know your businesses, right? Microsoft does not know all of your businesses. You know, governments need this. A company like advertising needs that. A company like hardware needs this. And you'd have to create like a different experience for these companies just based on their workforce, their readiness, what kind of work they do, what kind of good test. But it comes down to those use cases. Which are good use cases? Kind of drop down and say, I'm trying to do one of these five things. That's it.
Well, this is a very good point because a lot of, especially today, the feedback I get is, oh, Gen AI is bad, right? Whatever they produce is crap, right? But it goes back to your point about prompting, which a lot of us aren't trained on. Because for example, right, traditionally, even at work or personal lives, the prompt people will give is like, okay, write a 5-page book report on Harry Potter, right? And that's it. And then whatever comes up with, not good enough. But then if you prompt it properly, you can say like, I am a playwright in London, and I want you to write a 5-page summary of Harry Potter in the voice of James Bond to this audience. And by doing that, you get a better output. So I think that skill, that's something we need to hone and train people.
Yes. And going back to your extensibility question, Mario, this is extensibility right here, right? It's human. Grounding in data. I tell everybody extensibility is just grounding in data that you already have. Okay. Whether it's in that database over there where you use a plugin connector, Teams message extension, something or another, do not care. Or you're grounding in data of here is a document I wrote. Generate me 10 questions based on it with good answers. for an interview I'm going to do. I'm grounding my own data using the magic of the, I'm doing air quotes again, the power of the LLM to create interview questions and answers, but in my own voice with my own data. So that retrieval augmented generation, which is uploading this document, is a different kind of extensibility. So this is what I spend my time doing, is defining what is extensibility and helping people figure out what is the right extensibility model for what it is that they're trying to do.
As this continues to evolve and advance, right, it's really an exciting time. Fast forward 5 to 10 years from now, how do you envision the role of AI or maybe AI extensibility in software development?
I love this. I just love speculating about this because one of the things is that we're going to go from this AI, we prompt AI to AI prompts us, right? This more agentic sort of model. And I don't want to say agents because then everyone freaks. I'm saying where these models are going to be able to evolve so they help you make a plan, right? So for example, you know, I opened a wine bar recently. That was a pain. So what I would do is I would say, I want to build a website for a wine bar opening in Kirkland, Washington. Here are 10 wineries that we're going to source wines from. Please make a nice looking wine bars. Here's some pictures. And I probably wouldn't even do all this, right? This is what I would have to do right now. This would be today. This is what I tried. It is a humongous pain because it was 10 steps, each one. In the future, I'd be like, I'm opening a wine bar in Kirkland, Washington. Agent would come back and be like, do you have wines chosen? Yes. From where? These names. Okay, I'm going to find you 10 other wineries like them that you should get stuff from. Here's a menu. Approve the menu. Then it would be, here are images from your website or whatever, your social media. Do you want these on here or your Instagram? Yes, I do. And it would make the plan. Then it would recommend connectors and plugins that I should connect to data sources. Like I'm connected to Instagram, connected to this thing, connected to that thing. And then Shopify, that's right. If people want to buy it, to my GitHub to say like, hey, you've got an open source project for this. Do you want to use it? So it would make the plan, it would recommend connectors and plugins, and then it would execute with you approving things along the way. So like a true personal assistant, right? A true personal assistant. Right now, it's like a contractor who we call to do one task and they're like, new phone, who this, right? Who are you, Mario? You're like, we just went through this. Please write a Word document. It's like, no, I've never met you. You're like, please. So, but this going forward, it'll be like, obviously you're Mario. We have context, we have memory, we have planning, we have connectors, we have plugins. We have the ability to take steps in a logical order and check with you on permission. So that agentic model will be what AI evolves to. We're far from it because as you can see, we're still trying to figure out connectors and plugins.
The opportunity to have a business strategy partner to an extent, right? Someone that's at in a lot of the groundwork, exploration, analysis, that fundamentally changes even just the nature in which we build products, let alone when you think about other industries like the supply chain industry or any of these organizations where they're struggling to optimize their business. And so it is very interesting. Where do you see presently in the work you're doing the challenge in taking the developer's sort of traditional design sense? And how has Eyelid Light changed that? Do you think that you start in a different place to design your app? You think about data first, perhaps, or the user experience. What do you see?
I actually see a product like GitHub Copilot being able to fill in the gaps where you kind of suck as a dev. So, for example, I suck at UX. I am very good at thinking about API design. Like, I want to give it. Here's the outputs I want to get from this, say, API or this call or this function. I want this function to do this for me. Cool. What inputs do I need? These inputs. What is it going to look like on a page? I do not know, right? Take the outputs and put them on a page in some logical order so that people can put the inputs into the box and hit the button, and then they get outputs back. So I use GitHub Copilot to design me UX in JavaScript because I hate UX and it makes me anxious. But I like doing the API design. If I'm going to hook up data, I'm bad at data organization as well. So here's where I would want Copilot to be like, this data is crap. So, you know, that's now back to a human problem. But that's where I'm seeing people be able to fill gaps. The other thing that's very good is using AI to do test case development and test case running. Because we don't test enough, just as a society. So saying like, make me 50 test cases 10 of them performance, 10 of them security, 10 of them a localization, 10 of them stress. Like, as if you're a test manager, it generates them, runs them, and tells you where it's your failing. That's a rad scenario. I love that scenario. I used it in accessibility all the time, by the way. That's why I fell in love with GitHub Copilot, because it would generate me test cases for accessibility test cases, 10 of them, and run them and tell me what.
Do you think that the data that people now will actually, you know, spend more time thinking about ultimately the data schema and the relationship of data?
Yes, because up until now, we could just apply a lot of manual labor to it and say like, oh, you know, someone will go query the database with their special, you know, skill set of like this state, this table and this minus this, remove this, junction this. You have to be like, you know, you see people who are able to query stuff and you're looking at this query like, my friend, you're a coder, right? I've seen people do that in Power Apps with Dataverse. I'm like, what in the heck are you writing code about? Just write it better. They're like, no, the data's cracked. I'm like, oh. So now AI is not doing that for you. You have to get your data in order. Like, you have to, because I tell everybody, every company was like, oh, we want to do AI this year. I'm like, how's your data problem? They're like, oh, it's not. I'm like, okay, step one of doing AI is getting your data in order. As soon as you started that process, you're actually doing AI, because you're going to be able to get data in order for this one area, get it really good. Make sure it's clean. Make sure you don't have weird anomalies. Knock out all the, you know, unless the edge cases really matter. Make sure it's accurate. Make sure it's up to date. Make sure there's no conflicts. Like, what's your plan? And then apply AI to this and see what the results look like. I know I keep talking about the restricted SharePoint thing. It is such a good way for people to start to test just their data hygiene plan and say, like, what was all the work we had to do to get these SharePoints in order, right? And yeah, or like, you know, you can do restriction or this or that, the next thing, and say, like, do not copilot anything unless you turn it on. There's a bunch of like levers and toggles, but I think we've been trying to make people care about data hygiene for 10 years, but people are like, oh, apply manual labor to the problem and make it some nerd's problem. That's your problem, right? Because you're not going to AI anything until you have good data. That is a fact.
In fact, that's the exciting thing about AI, at least to us, is we've been preaching this message for the last 10, 12 years. They're like, yeah, don't worry about it. You know, we have big storage, unlimited, lots of storage. But now for AI to work,
you're like, let's just keep everything. We'll just dig around and search for it. I'm like, now you're going to get strange results that conflict each other. So, but I will tell you, the big manual data cleanup project is intimidating. Because you also need, this is where human in the loop is important. You need experts. And everyone's like, oh, AI is going to take our job. I'm like, what job? AI can't even do its own job. Like, it's not even giving you the results from the thing. You need a human to be able to say, this is good, this is bad. Reinforcement learning, human feedback, right? You need a human in the loop to be able to say, this is a good result, this is a bad result, good result, bad result. These are good test cases and bad test cases. But people are finding all kinds of out-of-date data through this. And they're like, where's it coming from? Like, I don't know. Go on an archaeological dig and figure it out. But that's such a common issue.
And even beyond that, right? So let's say, fine, we get our data in order, it's secure, we're now using AI, but more data will be generated. So there's still that discipline of how do you keep it clean and hygiene, and also now how do you distinguish, right? If it's created by ducks, because even if I have Copilot create something for me, it will say created by ducks, even though I didn't create it, right? So all that, organizations should have a strategy and plan.
Especially because I believe in responsible AI practices, which means human accountability. So if AI created data and it's not good data, that is on me, the human who spun up that AI to create it, to be like, this is bad, I'm going to delete this forever, right? Or correct it. But it's like, everyone will be a manager. And that's the closest way I can come up with to explain it. Like, instead of an IC, you're now a manager. With all of it comes all the manager drama, right? The power is you get a lot more stuff done and, you know, easier. The bad is you now have to be aware of enough to know that this is wrong, this is right, this is wrong, this is right. So I tell everyone, if you've ever managed a team, now you're going to manage a team of AI. If you've never managed a team, welcome to upper, you know, welcome to middle management. This is your life now.
It's interesting you say that. There was a stat, I think it was maybe it was a Gartner, they were talking about how those that are actually going to be better at prompts are managers. Typically, you're accustomed to instructions that are more, you know, delegated type nature instructions that really help you fine tune, communicate better. In many ways, it's a way for you to improve your communication, be more succinct about what it is you're trying to get.
Anyone who's managed contractors, interns, new hires, you're going to be in a much better place. Or teachers. Teachers are doing so well because they're used to instructions.
And right, right. And that's the thing. That's why it's called co-pilot, right? Sometimes people forget. It's,
no,
co-pilot,
it's co-pilot,
not
autopilot. You are the co.
Shift Happens Podcast. Shift Happens Podcast.
Before we wrap up, for those considering building their own co-pilots or implementing AI, what are the one or two key takeaway?
Okay. Step one, before you go build your own co-pilot, learn to use the ones that exist very well. Because by learning to use the ones that exist, you're going to be able to say, what exactly do I want mine to do? Because it does these things very well and it does things very badly. So once you really learn to use existing ones, like if you're planning to write documents, use the Word one. If you want to generate social media, you can use Microsoft Copilot. Want to do a salesy thing, Dynamics something, which is the right Copilot for you. Second one is doing what Mario said, is extend with your own data. Because if you don't have data, what Copilot are you building in the first place? So extend with your own data and figure out why it's not enough, right? Say, no, I want to actually build an app from scratch. That's my own name on it, like Donna's Copilot. Cool. That's a good reason. Then figure out a simple way to do it, like use Copilot Studio. If you just want a conversational experience, like a chatbot, you could put it on your website, on your teams, internal, externally, who knows. You point to data sources, it copilots for you, generative answers. It's very straightforward. If you want to be an AI developer, go to Azure AI Studio, choose a model, choose your data sources. You now are in the business of figuring out responsible AI and security. You are now an AI developer. You need to know the whole stack top to bottom. So I tell people, if you've not done those first four steps, do not go do that last step, because there's so many parts of the stack that you don't yet understand. So that is my feedback to everybody, is do the four-step process. And we are so excited to unveil all the teaching tools for Build on do these four steps. Don't get creative and go immediately build your own co-pilot, which is what I see people doing. I'm like, folks, you don't even know what it can do yet. So go figure that out first before you need to go build your own.
Awesome. You know what we need to do? I think after Build, we need to get together at your wine bar and continue the conversation.
I don't hate that for us. I don't.
Shift Happens Podcast.
Thanks for listening. We learned about the importance of data in AI, adoption challenges, and the potential for making our software more adaptable to the disruption happening around us. We also discussed the need for a clear guidance and skilling content to help people navigate the rapidly evolving field of AI. If you liked today's episode, subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. See you next time. Shift Happens Podcast is a production of AvePoint, Inc., produced and edited by the AvePoint brand team. Stay up to date on the latest trends in digital workplace transformation by visiting avpoint.com.